Hey everyone, you're listening to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I'm so happy to have someone that's so eclectic on the podcast today. I want to introduce everyone to Daniel French from the amazing Chicano band in East LA, Los Cafeteros. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. He's going to pronounce it way better than me, but they are a hodgepodge, mix match of hip-hop, soul music, and traditional music from Veracruz, Mexico. Please help me welcome Daniel French.
Hello, hello. Check, check.
Hello, hello. Daniel, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Super excited to have you on the podcast today. It should be fairly straightforward, talking about a subject you should know pretty well yourself.
I think I've heard of him.
Yes, definitely, definitely. How is everything for you and in life and in LA right now?
Good, good. You know, just one day at a time, you know, trying to focus on improving my routines. You know, routines have been big, like, you know, tour life is like just a little bit of a mess. You know, you try to have routines, but you're in a different place all the time. And so I've just been loving being home and being able to build up routines that help me live the life that I want to live, you know, one step at a time.
Nice. Yeah. I saw you were doing some composting the last thing on Instagram I saw.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been gardening and growing a bunch of greens, and which is cool. Like, I don't, you know, not all of my food comes from my garden, but all of my greens do. So, yeah, I spend time there and I try to water my musical garden and my food garden and the gardens in my relationship. So it's a cool metaphor to, like, remember that everything needs composting.
Yeah. You also have more respect for your food when you put the time and the energy into it and the ground and the earth. We're very much removed from that.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, you build a relationship with it.
Yeah, I mean, they say, you know, if people want to eat meat or not, if they go and actually hunt it themselves, you have a different appreciation, or go fish yourselves, and same with gardening, too.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's, you know, that's like our ancestors, that's how they lived, and that it's dangerous to be disconnected from your food, for sure.
Yeah, you got to have respect. You got to have respect for your food and for the land and the earth and the universe and what it's given you and its abundance that you're tapping into and pay it forward. But yeah, I've been following your band for a long time. Obviously, I've known you for, you know, through Luis for many years and had, you know, opportunities to see you on stage and chat with you in different social settings. But I, you know, always love getting a deep dive into the music in Los Cafeteros. And I'm not as connected into the Spanglish music world as Luis and other people. And so, yeah, you guys are big. I mean, people know who you are and you know, on top 10 lists for Chicano bands. And you're some of the great luminaries that you guys are rubbing shoulders with. And you deserve it. I mean, by listening to the music, it's everything and more than any of the critics or anybody, other fans are saying. So,
thank you. Yeah, no, I appreciate you checking in and you know, checking out some of our tunes. It's a gift to be able to play music, and we've been playing together. I think I want to say that I started playing music with members of Las Cafeteras in 2006, and then we were like this group of students who was playing music at a community center called the Eastside Cafe in El Sereno. In LA, Northeast LA, at a community center called the Eastside Cafe. So at some point there was like 20 of us learning traditional songs from Veracruz, Mexico, from the Gulf Coast. Songs like where La Bamba comes from. Yeah, so we started there, and people would say, oh, here come, ahí vienen los cafeteros. Here's the cafeteros, the people from the cafe, the Eastside Cafe. Right. So we were kind of named by the place that we came out of, this community center called the Eastside Cafe. And then, I don't know, we just kept playing and we're like trying to learn these like traditional songs and get them like at least to have them be subpar and not terrible. And when we played them, and it's cool because I didn't grow up with that music, you know, but then we kind of kept playing. And after a while, we needed like a band name, like, all right, well, what do we put on the flyer? And so we decided that in Spanish, if you say Los Cafeteros, it's kind of like saying It's like if we walk into a room and I say, hey, guys, if there's women and men in the room, the women in the room will know that I'm probably also addressing them. But if I say, hey, ladies, the men in the room are going to think I'm not addressing them. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, Cliff, you're probably if I say, hey, ladies, you're probably going to think, oh, he's not talking about me. He's talking to the women in the room. And right. So Spanish is similar. So cafeteros is masculine and cafeteras is feminine. So we made our name Las Cafeteras to acknowledge that there are women and men in the group. And now the men are going to be addressed as feminine. So we're going to flip the rule and just pay that homage and respect to, and also to the feminine within us as men, that sort of male, masculine and feminine are energies that exist kind of in all people. So anyways, that's a little bit about how we started. We were jamming out at a community center doing community oriented stuff and weren't even calling ourselves a band until we had to be on a flyer at La Cita. And I think that slowly started us thinking of ourselves as a band. It's funny because I think most people play music and they say, oh, I want to start a band. And then they find people to be in a band with. So we just wanted to learn like a traditional music, which actually isn't even really about performing as much as the community function of music.
Yeah, you can definitely notice that in the way you guys come together. It makes sense that it's very organic. It's very inclusive. And, you know, people that, whether they speak Spanish or not, you guys do some stuff, Spanglish, English, all over the map. Mm-hmm. I wanted to kind of zoom into your last album, Tastes Like L.A., and understand kind of like what's the process of making the Las Cafeteras records. How is it making that particular album?
You know, making Tastes Like L.A. was interesting because it was the first time, it was our second album, and our first album was all live. So the first album that we made was like, you know, like most of us playing at the same time, and we might have done the vocals separately on our first record. And the second record was like mostly a studio album, like mostly, I mean, we might have just like played the song in the room. We recorded it at Bedrock Studios in Echo Park in LA. Yeah, so we were hopping the room with our engineer and producer, Eugene Towal, and this super talented dude who engineered Beyonce and, you know, Wu-Tang Clan and a bunch of people in New York. And he came out here and started recording a bunch of a lot of different people, but a lot especially Latino bands. And so we'd be in the room with him, and we would just start playing like the song as we had it, and then he would listen, and we try to find the right tempo. And so we kind of started studioizing the tracks, like, okay, well, now it's locked in at this tempo, or at least for this section. And then we would go, and then we would try stuff. We'd throw things on the wall, and it's kind of fun. We have this song called La Morena, which is a traditional song, Jarocho song. And on that one, it's like half of the bass. It was cool because like I'd never done this on a track, but we had the bass was like a Moog. We used like a Moog synthesizer for part of the song, and then the other part was a ukulele bass. So it's nice. Kind of cool to like do things like that in a studio. For me, like, I've been in studios and made music in studios, but to really play like that was kind of fun.
So Las Cafeteras is a Chicano band. You're from East LA, and your music fuses spoken word and folk music with traditional San Jaracho, Afro-Mexican music, and Zapateado dancing. So can you explain what those are for people that don't know, including myself, and how you fuse them together?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, like when we started, we were learning this music, Son Jarocho, from Veracruz, Mexico. And it's an Afro-Mexican music. It's a music that comes from the Gulf Coast. Like, everybody knows the song La Bamba, but mm-hmm. not everybody knows the story of La Bamba and how even Bamba is a Bantu word from West Africa that I don't know anybody who knows the meaning of that word, but that's part of the heritage of it. And so the Spaniards came, long story made very short, the Spaniards landed in Veracruz first in the Gulf Coast of Mexico, what we now call Mexico, subjugated attacked the native folks there, the Popolucas. They brought with them West Africans that they had enslaved. They brought with them Arabs and Jews that were on those ships who were coming from Spain. And so you had this mixing of culture, kind of like in Louisiana, you had through slavery and all the travel of all the different people who were coming there, plus the native folks. I mean, that's where jazz comes from. Mm-hmm. And so in a similar way, you have Son Jarocho kind of emerges out of this nexus of, really, I'm going to call it less of a nexus and more of a pressure cooker of colonization and slavery. And so out of that comes joy and beauty, as our people tend to do. And so that's the story of Son Jarocho music. And it's got these 8-string guitars and people play donkey jawbones and it, like, do this zapateado, which is like a kind of stomp dancing. And it comes from a community celebration. It's communal music. It's before I think most of us, me included, were raised with music as a thing that's recorded. Like when you hear music, it's you're playing a record that somebody made in a studio. Not a lot of people grow up with a family playing music that is traditional to some place. You know, you might even have an uncle or somebody, like I have cousins who play music, but a lot of their stuff was playing songs that were pre-recorded on a record by a band like War or Tierra or something. And so this stuff comes before music was about performance, before it was about getting paid for it. So that's kind of an interesting part. And I think that when we heard it, when we first heard that music, it opened up this kind of cultural dialogue between us and Mexico. And none of us are from that part of Mexico. So it's not like it's like our grandparents' music. It's like, it's just an old, it's a traditional music from there that we resonate with because it's alive and it's about telling stories. It's about improvising and it's about relating to your environment. So that's kind of how Las Cafeteras connects with what some Jarocho music is, because we're basically taking these traditional songs and forms and saying, cool, we're adapting that now to LA, to the context of the city that we grow up in, that we're raising, even now some of us, our families in, and we're adapting a song like La Morena, like I was telling you about, which is a song about a beautiful brown woman and a dark-skinned woman. And now La Morena on that record is talking about Mother Earth. And so, it's a story about kind of the pollution and the mistreatment that the earth has received. At the same time, it's about the medicine that she offers us and the love. So, that's kind of like an entry point. So we take this like traditional music and we use it to talk about what's happening now, what's happening in our context, the struggles for justice. We have a song called "If I Was President" on the record, and it's more of a hip hop record with some of these OG instruments in it and keys. And I play keys on that and sing and I rap on it. You know, so there's like hip hop in there mixed with some traditional sounds, with some maybe some R&B kind of vibes at moments. And but every song on that record is a different genre. It's a different kind of vibe. So I think it was us trying to open up and say, hey, look, we like doing lots of different stuff. So let's just, that's what's cool about music, is like we're not tied. We're not on a record label that's telling us we have to make anything. You know, no one's in there telling us what to make. It's just us making what we want to make. So it was really fun just to create.
LA Times describes Las Cafeteras as uniquely Angeleno, a mismatch of punk, hip hop, beat music, cumbia, and rock. And they say live, your band is magnetic. So would you say that's an accurate description of the kind of hodgepodge mix of all the different styles, all the different influences, the traditional, the contemporary? Is that really what Las Cafeteras is to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it, you know? I mean, Las Cafeteras is like, you could call it Chicano music, but really I would call it more like LA music. Like, I feel like if you grew up in LA, you grew up with, there's a bunch of different LAs. Like, depending on where you grew up in LA, you have a different experience. But I think one thing that's common is that, like, the world is in LA. If you grew up in a small town in the middle of the US and you only saw white people that look like you or something, if you're white, then you have a different experience than, like me, I grew up, every house in the San Gabriel Valley, just east of East LA, was a different culture. Like, I go in one house and I'm taking my shoes off. The other one, I'm bowing. The other ones, I'm yelling and hugging the parents. The other ones, like, every house was a different country, culture, food. And so that I feel like I call our music L.A. music because L.A. is Mexican, you know? I mean, L.A. is Nate. I mean, originally, L.A. is Tongva. You know, it's Tongva land, the native people from here. But I feel like if you're in L.A., you can't help but do Mexican things. You can't help but have tacos and burritos. And most of the streets are named in Spanish. And so California, you know, all these words. And so it's us kind of just blending this world that we grew up in, hip hop and cumbia, which is like dance music from Colombia, and our traditions, Native American stuff and sounds, and the kind of ways that we're piecing together our experience. I think this record was sort of an adventure in that, you know, I mean, there's kind of like a, I don't know, there's a song about the ice cream man there called El Paletero, you know, it's like,
oh yeah,
like a love song about the ice cream man. I mean, you know, like.
Everyone loves the ice cream man. When they hear the music or they see the cart, they come running.
Right? It's like, yeah, I don't say the Pied Piper anymore because it's got a whole other connotation now. But yes, like, yeah. Like the ice cream, like it's joy for the whole community. Like you see kids smile for the whole block.
Yeah, you definitely do. You definitely do. So now with your role in the band, you're responsible for vocals, you MC in the band, and you play the harana. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. But yeah. can you explain these instruments? Because I really want to dig deep into San Jaracho instruments, the riquinito and the quijada, which is the jawbone, and the tarima, the wooden platform. Because these instruments are not used widely in Western music, at least American music, North American music. And so... yeah, like how did you gravitate to these instruments? I know you were learning about it in school. And then how do these make a unique sound that it's uniquely Chicano or uniquely in that vibe of what Las Cafeteras is?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So like you said, I sing, I MC, I play keys. And now I'm playing more and more like synthesizers and stuff and like running beats through Ableton, which is kind of fun. And I play the jarana, which is one of those traditional instruments from Veracruz. Is part of the list of traditional instruments that make up the sound of Son Jarocho. A jarana is an 8-string guitar carved out of one piece of wood with a top put on it. And the one that I play on that record was made by my good friend Jorge Mijangos. He's from Chiapas, Mexico. He's been playing with us for years. And he lives in Ventura, California. So he's here in SoCal. He makes the instruments. And it's just their labors of love. So much time goes into creating them. Then you've also got, they come in different sizes. So on that record, you'll hear the primera, segunda, and tercera. So there are different sizes of the jarana. And the smaller ones, the primera, is brighter. The segunda, which I play, is a little sort of in the middle. And then the tercera, the third one, is a little bit heavier. And so then you've got the Requinto Jarocho, which is a 4-string lead guitar. And that's the lead guitar, right? So that's the one that sort of calls the song and guides melody and also keeps time. Like hitting every beat, right? And syncopation. So it keeps, in a certain way, it keeps time. And then we've got the tarima, which is a stage, sort of a wooden box that the dancer will dance on, but it's not just aesthetic, but it's also percussive. So it's playing a role in the rhythms of the music. And the dance for that is called zapateado. So now you'll hear on La Morena at the top. And that's people wearing some shoes that have heels that clack on a piece of wood. And traditionally, then you'll also hear the quijada del burro, the donkey jawbone. And so these instruments kind of work together with people's voices. And then folks sing, and a lot of the music is call and response, too. That's also part of the African kind of like sonora, like the African sound and aesthetic that comes into Son Jarocho, this call and response. And so... yeah, you'll hear all that stuff in our records and on our live shows, even when we're using synthesizers and stuff. Like, it's part of the sound of Veracruz, Mexico, that you'll hear often out there. It's their oldies. It's their stuff for hundreds of years now. And it's older than your grandma's oldies. You know what I mean? Like, it's music that I think we're usually not used to hearing songs that are that old, honestly, for most of us. Yeah, so you'll hear all that in our record in Tastes Like LA and in all of our recent collaborations.
Nice. So speaking of collaborations and performances, you performed in the good company of Mexican icons Cafanas, am I pronouncing that? And Lila Downs, superstar Juanes, who is internationally known, LA legends Oso Motley, who we opened for with Noble Creatures, love them, and then Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros, the LA Feel, obviously everyone knows them from Hollywood Bowl, and then Talib Kweli. So what is it like to also share the stage with such great talents?
Wow. I mean, Juanes was a really nice guy. The LA Phil, we got to play our songs at a church in Mid-Wilshire, at a Methodist church. And they played our songs with us. Like they wrote scores out, and then we had like a mid-sized version of the LA Phil playing live with us. That was like playing our song Luna Lovers with timpani and a whole string section and a whole woodwind section. Like, I cried at soundcheck. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Like, electricity just running through every person on stage, like every note. It's like magnified the more musicians you have and when they're playing in sync and well together. And it was super fun, and it was also scary because in our band, you know, we're not like, we're all trying to be better musicians every day, but I mean, we're not like jazz heads, or we're not used to following written music. So like, I remember we were playing the song Trabajador, Trabajadora, and they're running off of sheet music. So like, they have, like, we're used to running off of cycles of sounds. Like, you might vamp on a section and it's just going to loop until the next cue comes. But for them, it's like, no, they're playing 18 measures of this section, then 12 measures of this section. Like, they're moving forward whether you do it or not. So there's one time we started late on a section, and I had to count how many bars and then remove those bars from my hip hop section, my rapping section, so that we wouldn't hit the next cue, like, so it wouldn't crash. And I was so scared that I was gonna miscount bars and like have it go from the most beautiful moment of my life to the ugliest, like crash and burn. So it was stressful, and it was fun working with them. And you know, I don't know why. I mean, I honestly think like we're not like, I think we're just another band, you know, like we're just, I mean, there's so many people who are amazing, you know, but we've had the honor to work with some really talented artists. And, you know, one of the things that's cool is we talk a lot about what's going on in the world. We talk a lot about how Black people are treated, how Brown people are treated, Native people. We talk about the women and how women are treated, and also how we should be treated and what we want. And so we get political. We talk about the real things in life. And I think that it's always been real cool for me to be able to share those kinds of stories on stages with people who may not normally talk about that stuff. Like, the LA Phil isn't talking about that stuff, but they were that day. You know, Juanes may not really get into political stuff, but his audience did with us. And so it's been rad to just work with people that inspire us. Oso Motley, of course, LA legends and friends. It's been a dream come true. And my hope is that we can keep doing it. Like, somehow shows can come back soon, and we can come out even stronger and better and play with our heroes and hopefully make recordings with them.
Oh yeah. I mean, they definitely will. If you can bring back traditional music before recorded music was even a thing, then music will come back. Events will come back. There's no doubt about that. Survive. And great music always survives. It's just the way that it is. And so I think it's also nice with the LA Feel, because it shows such a huge, iconic talent of LA embracing you and your band and the culture that, you know, and that's LA's roots. LA is from, you know, traditionally, originally Mexico, or what's now known as Mexico. And so I think that's great. I think that's great to see that juxtaposition. And I do understand about them keeping you on your toes. You know, a lot of traditional music, because it wasn't written down, that's a very westernized, very European thing. Mm-hmm. Working with the LA field, they're used to, there are no repeats and there are no vamps. You know, they just, they read it down note by note. And a lot of them only play what's written, you know, whereas other people are like not worried about what's written. They can do in between the lines because they're just more about the feeling and the culture and the vibe, which your band most certainly is. Now, speaking of which, not only playing with those great musicians, you've also been and hit amazing stages like Bonnaroo, Hollywood Bowl, WOMAD in New Zealand, and the Montreal Jazz Festival. And so what is it like to perform in such large crowds, you know, to be introduced to this Chicano East LA band?
I mean, for a bunch of Chicanos and native kids and from LA to be at, like, we all know the Hollywood Bowl. We've all seen some of our favorite artists there, but to be on the stage and not just sweeping it up, like to perform and have us, like, people would hear us. It's a dream come true. I've had a picture of the Hollywood Bowl on my wall for the last 10 years. Like, and I have it on my wall. It's still on my wall now. I'm looking at it. It's there. It has been there to remind me that we're going to get to play there one day and keep practicing and keep going and keep working. And the day before our show, this was 2019 at the Hollywood Bowl, or 2 days before the show, we had like a side gig at a university at UC Santa Barbara, like a private event. And I was jumping up and down on stage because we move. When we're on stage, it's electric. Like you're going to sweat if you come to our show. And I was jumping up and down and I hurt my leg. I couldn't walk. Like the doctor said, yeah, you might have torn a ligament. You might not. We'll see. This is 2 days before my biggest show ever. And the dream show has been on my wall and we got two nights in a row opening for the Gypsy Kings at the Hollywood Bowl. I said, you know what? Even if I can't walk, I'm going to rock that. I'm going to be the fool who rocks the mic the hardest from a wheelchair, if that's what I got to do. Like, and so we came out there with that energy. We had, I think, 29 minutes to perform or something. And they have a clock next to you. Like you're on stage. It's like a giant clock, like on game shows or something. And it counts down. And they told us, like, if you go over time, we will cut you. Like your set will just stop and you'll look dumb. So don't do it. So. Yeah. We practiced, we got the set down like by the second to the right time. And it's weird because at the Hollywood Bowl, you get to see, you see the people up front that are the highest paying patrons, like the people who've got the VIP table with the swanky thing. And right. And so they're not necessarily even your audience, right? Like they might be just like subscribers or maybe they might be there to see the Gypsy Kings. So you're kind of like, I mean, yeah, you're playing for them, but really you're trying to play for the people in the back, the people in the cheap seats, like the mob. And so, but it's weird because once it gets dark, you can't see those people. So you kind of have to like listen for them and like shout out to people. It was a dream come true. Like, I'll just say that for us to be from where we're from and to not see ourselves on TV, you know, I mean, more and more now, like there's, like we got the Issa Rae's and you got the America Ferreras and you got the people who are putting out more stories with people who look like us in them. But we didn't grow up seeing ourselves on TV or even in concerts, really. And so there's not even a lot of Chicano bands like that leave their hometown. And so for us to travel the world and play Bonnaroo and, you know, to be able to play from to play with artists like Estelle and Atlanta and to come back to the Hollywood Bowl, it was like a dream come true. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I've made it, like I can kick it now. It was like, no, this has been on my wall for 10 years and it just came true. And I'm hopping up and down on one leg. Like, I can't believe I just played at the Hollywood Bowl. Like, I had I don't know how many people, 14,000 people or 20,000 people waving their hands in the air saying thank you to each other and to their ancestors. And now what? Like, what's the next dream? What's the next goal? And that's one thing I love about music is that it's endless. It's like the ocean. Like, you'll never know the ocean. You might sail on different days to certain parts of places, but the ocean is so vast. Like, we only see the surface. And I feel like music is like that. Like, it's like this devotion, this relationship that we kind of embark upon. And the more we spend time with it, the more it teaches us about music, but also about ourselves. It's like a mirror. It's like, the more I give you, the more you give back. The more I give you, it's the cycle. And it's not about even, I mean, yes, I want to become a master at the instruments I play, but really, to me, that a master still has so much to learn. And so I think it's the same way with dreams. Like, music teaches us about, hey, well, you're trying to play this chord. Well, I don't know how to play the chord, or it's hard to finger the chord, or with, you know, on the guitar or the piano. I don't know what notes to play or what comes next. You struggle, but then you get better. And then now you're not trying to figure out that thing, like, because you practice, right? You get better, and now you know your 1/4/5s or whatever. And then with time, you get more comfortable with certain things. But at the end of the day, you're learning about yourself and how to become a better person, because you have to deal with your patience. You have to deal with self-doubt. And the universe gave me that opportunity the day before, like, all right, well, I mean, how down are you for this dream? Are you willing to go even if you can't walk? Like, I had to put that in my mind. Like, even if I can't walk, I'm going to get on that stage and deliver this performance. Like, if I have to crawl, if people have to, like, no matter what, I will do it. And I think that our lives are full of moments like that, where whether you're a musician, a singer, a trombone player, whether you're a painter, a chef, like, life, and of course, 2020 and 2021 has been throwing things at us. Reasons to stop, reasons to curl up in a ball and cry. And if we do, that's fine. But we got to get back up, because there's a dream out there waiting for us to experience, a dream waiting to receive us. And then we'll realize that mountaintop, that there's more mountaintops after that. There's just levels on levels of dreams come true, and mastery of self, mastery of the craft, is a part of the process and the goal to get there, more than just saying, oh, I play the Hollywood Bowl, like, haha, look at me. It's like, no, it's me. It's the pursuit of what's possible, because I have to believe that I'm capable of more and that more is possible. I cannot accept less. I cannot accept that the world is small, or that I need to act small. I refuse. My mom taught me better than that.
Yeah, so, I think that's true. There's a lot of self-limiting beliefs out there, and you have the power to overcome that by putting up things like a picture of the Hollywood Bowl and dreaming big and thinking big and letting the law of attraction bring you closer to it, and walking out or crawling out or rolling out onto the stage. However, you know, the show must go on. You know, opportunity knocks. You got to put on the work clothes. You got to get out there and do it no matter what.
Big time.
So then you guys are in a great class of artists, especially Chicano bands. I've seen the rise of Chicano Batman over the last couple of years as well as the Grammy-winning La Santa Cecilia, who I've seen on many different things, TV, the Grammys. And so why do you think the music scene is becoming more embracive and more eclectic?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of what I part of what I meant when I talked about L.A. music. Like, yes, La Santa Cecilia makes a lot of music in Spanish, and Chicano Batman mostly makes some music in Spanish, but yet it's all kind of considered, like, related to each other, right? And we've all played shows with each other and, like, you know, all the same gigs with each other and our friends and across the bands. And so it's like, there's that. There's the LA-ness of music, and just, you're going to cross different circles of music naturally. But there's also, at a very, very high level, one, I think that Latinos have, are more Latinas, Latinos, Latinx folks are more integrated into different rungs of the music industry now than they were even 10 or 20 years ago. But also, like, if you look at it, like, when J Balvin put out Mi Gente with Beyonce, that was a giant sign that Latin music is now pop music. What was now considered Latin is now pop. Like, when Beyonce wants to get on a track, it's pop music now. Despacito broke all the records. It's pop music now. I was on my family's reservation in Gahnawake out near Montreal, Canada, and getting some fish and chips. I was getting some fried fish on the res, and people were playing Bad Bunny in the spot. Like, so this music has become pop music, and I think that that has those people, those artists and their teams have really opened up markets for us. They've opened up ears because now people want to hear that Latin thing, even if they don't know what it means. It's just like, ooh, you know, like, it's got a little thing. And now you've got people like, you know, you've got like YG, you know, dressing up in a mariachi suit, you know, in his music video. Like, but that's almost different because, again, the YG, that's some LA stuff. And Mexicans and Black folks, we've lived together for such a long time that we've always traded cultures and connected with each other's cultures. So, but I think at that larger level, like, those folks have opened up those doors. You know, people even like Ivy Queen, like from reggaeton, like, there's all these waves of music that have opened up, and all of their excellence has kind of made it possible for, I think, wider audiences, not just whiter audiences, but wider and more vast audiences around the world interested. We got people from Nigeria who listen to us and play us.
Yeah, that's powerful.
That's wild.
Yeah.
But I listen to Nigerian music, so it's like dope. Like we're listening to, I mean, we're not like popular in Nigeria, but I'm saying, like, we have that exchange now. And as an artist, who I go to shows and I love artists, and those are memories that I make at their concerts with my friends and family. Like, to be listened to as an artist, it's like such a big honor because I just don't see myself that way. Like, why would you listen to us? But it's so cool that we get that cultural exchange.
Yeah, and that's probably why people enjoy looking at it, listening to you, because it's not trying to be anything that's not, and it's not trying to really be anything. It's just trying to be it, or it is. And so what's next musically for the group?
Yeah, next, you know, quarantine's been a little weird. It's been hard to get together as a band, you know. I have my room set up as a studio, so I can record from home. And we've had a lot of us, the individual band members, working on our own songs and kind of passing them around here and there. Like, hey, maybe, you know, maybe put some vocals on this one, Daniel or Denise or Hector, Jose, our drummer, you know, he'll put out songs. And so, like, I think that quarantine has caused us to have a different process because we can't get in the room anymore because, you know, we have different levels of vulnerability to COVID. But nonetheless, we've continued to write and create. And I think that what's next is I think you're going to hear more sounds in the next record, in the next singles. Already there's some more electronic elements, some 808s, some, you know, more beatmaker type driven stuff. But of course, still these traditional instruments. And I just think that we're growing a lot. And I think that COVID has caused everybody to grow a lot. So you're going to hear more love songs. You're going to hear more hip hop. You're going to hear more cumbia, more of things in between. And I hope that you'll hear things that you've never heard before. This next set of music is coming out super fire, and I can't wait to share it with y'all.
Excellent, excellent. So we have some rapid fire questions that we ask all our guests as we start to wrap up.
Yeah.
And so what advice would you give a newbie starting out in music today?
It's the same advice I give myself. Practice, practice, practice. Keep going. I mean, there's your craft and then there's the business. And now, you know, it's kind of the same thing. Like, you got to work on your craft every day and you got to figure out the craft of the social media and the business side. Yeah. So just keep at it. And the thing I tell myself every day is, like, don't be precious about that. Adrian Young, this awesome producer, he says, you know, you don't be precious about your shit. Like, just make it and make more stuff and share it and make more stuff and keep going. Don't let nobody stop you. Whether you got 1 like or 1 million likes, who cares? Like, if you like it, put it out and hustle it.
Yeah. All great advice and definitely true in this new online world that we live in. And mm-hmm. so what do you want your legacy to be? And I know you guys have many, many years ahead of you, but like when it's all said and done, what do you want people to say or remember most about you and about the group?
Myself, I feel like legacy lives in the mind of those who knew us best. So there's qualities to the legacy. Like, you know, what my mom would say about my legacy is different than what you might say, just because my mom knows me better. Or in different ways. And so I would want my legacy to be that the people who I loved knew that I loved them, felt that love in my day-to-day actions in their life. And that legacy also hopefully included following your dreams and following your joy. That's what I would want people to, I guess, say about me, but also live.
I hear that. I think that's a lot of musicians and I think the world needs more of that. It needs more people living their best lives, living with the intentionality, living out their dreams, being free to dream, because sometimes parts of life can choke a dream out of you or make it very difficult for you to have the mindset to be free thinking to dream. Yeah. So that's great. Mm-hmm. And I do agree with the layers and levels, depending on how people know you. And your mom usually knows, I think, for me, the best. What should people listen to first in your discography? If they're going into your stuff, like what song, what album, like what's the go-to?
Yeah, for sure. If you're your first time coming to Las Cafeteras, check out La Bamba Rebelde. It's a version of La Bamba. It's a, you know, Chicano style, lots of good vibes and stories on it. And then, you know, press the random button or, you know, go from there. But I think that's a good place to start. And then we also just put out a really cool cover of Georgia, which Ray Charles made famous. But it's like a cumbia version of Georgia. So you can check that out. We did it for the Georgia elections.
Nice. That's very cool. I have to check that one out. That one I haven't heard, but the La Bamba I did. Mm-hmm. And I definitely want to dig in more. And so where can everyone find you online?
Hit us up everywhere. We're on Instagram, at Las Cafeteras. And on all the platforms, we're at Las, L-A-S. Cafeteras, Las Cafeteras. Check out our stuff on YouTube. We got a bunch of cute videos. We're on all of the streaming platforms like Spotify and Apple Music, and we're out there. So, you know, we got some cute merch. If you want some, you know, some swaggy gifts for your, you know, loved one or friends or even your enemies, we got the culture that you can wear, that you can bump it in your car, or while you're making your dinner.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us on the podcast Deeper Grooves to let us learn all the amazing things about the music of Las Cafeteras. And we definitely want to keep in touch with you guys. We'll circle back when all the links and everything are done so that we can continue to follow your illustrious career. And we hope that the world gets rebooted and we'll see you guys out back on the stage in LA and beyond very, very soon.
Thank you so much, Cliff. It's been a pleasure to be on the show, and y'all take care. Keep on doing your thing.
You too, sir. You take care. We'll talk soon. Hey, everyone. Thanks again. You just listened to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. Daniel French, so happy to have him on the podcast today and to speak about the music of Las Cafeteras. Definitely listen to them on all streaming platforms. Follow them on social media. They are definitely a Chicano band, East LA band to watch. Super excited to have their great versions of Georgia and La Bamba. Go check it out. Go check it out right now. It's amazing on all streaming platforms. Las Cafeteras. I'd like to also thank our engineer Tim Hall and 1192 Studios for mixing and mastering this recording today. If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, you can check us out online at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves or anchor.fm/deepergrooves. Until then, be you. No one can tell you you're doing it wrong. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.